You are Locked On Texans, your daily Houston Texans podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Should the Texans go ahead and sign Jadeveon Clowney to an extension right now? This offseason, will Chronicle Texans beat writer John McClain wrote about that question, and we are so lucky because he's going to join us to knock around that and several other topics in today's show. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Robert Land from the Houston Sports Talk Podcast. My co-host, Brian Patterson, will be back later this week. Thanks for jumping on the Locked On Texans Podcast, your best daily source of Texans news, views, and interviews. We're part of the FanRag Sports Network, and like I said, this is daily, so you got a great source of information for you every day of the week. You're about to hear the first of a two-part conversation I had with John McClain late last week. For most of you, I know John needs no interjection, but for those who don't know, McClain's been the Chronicle NFL beat writer in Houston for four decades, covering the Oilers and then the Texans. He's been a fixture on Sports Radio 610 as well. We had this conversation prior to Bill O'Brien dropping a little news a couple of days ago, telling Sports Radio 610 that Kareem Jackson will move over to safety full time. Of course, now that Andre Howell is out with Hodgkin's lymphoma, the cancer diagnosis. So Kareem makes that move, and Brian and I will look at the big change for him, what that means for the Texans later this week. But first, let me throw it to my chat with John McClain. We got together at a local pizza place just a few days ago. With us is John McClain, and John, you wrote in the Chronicle just in the last week or so, you said, quote, "I may be wrong, but I don't think the Texans will sign Jadeveon Clowney to an extension." Let me ask you this, regardless of whether they sign Clowney, do you think it's wise to sign him ahead of time, or do you feel like maybe they should have taken the cap money that they had this season and made sure they nailed down one or maybe two of the offensive line spots, especially considering you probably should take advantage of this short window you have with Deshaun Watson on his rookie contract?
Robert, Clowney would have been signed to an extension, I believe, if he'd been on the field. But he hadn't been on the field since the season. He had a scope on his knee, and a scope's not supposed to be very bad. And Bill O'Brien says he's not worried about it. Clowney's assured him he'll be on the field when they report to training camp in West Virginia. So maybe Jadeveon rehabbing his knee, and he's there. You know, he could have just not showed up like other players have done around the league. It was more about not getting hurt when you got so much money on the line. And the bottom line is this: they have a tight window from to the start of the regular season, because Brian Gaines' philosophy, same as Rick Smith, no negotiations during the season. So the agents and players know there's a deadline there. And they've had players sign late like that, DeAndre Hopkins, Matt Schaub, Eric Winston, but they had negotiations all through that. They haven't had hardly any negotiations. And the reason is, do you give almost $100 million to a guy whose first 2 years were hampered by injuries and now has a knee injury? I wouldn't, and I don't think they will. Now, when he gets on the field, he's not going to go 0-60 the first day or the first week. They're going to bring all those guys along slowly who've been hurt, because there's no need to just throw them out there doing 100% right away. So I just think there's such a small window. Maybe they will get it done. I don't think Clowney would sign. His agent, Buzz Cook, would agree to a deal before Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack do their deals with the Rams and the Raiders. And they don't seem close in their deals either. And ultimately, I think Clowney would make more money if he plays like he has the last 2 years, and if Watt and Merciless with Matthew and Reed, and if they stay relatively healthy, their defense could be real good again. He helps them go to the playoffs, then the price of doing business with him goes up. And if they couldn't reach a deal, then they just franchise him. Right now, the projected franchise tag for an outside linebacker is about $16 million a year, which would be right now, that looks really good, but a year from now, based on other deals, it might not be so great.
Does it make sense, though, do you think, to wait on him regardless of his health or whatever, just because you know that you got this short window where you got Deshaun really cheap, and you've got Ty Matthew where you got him signed for this year, but you don't know if you're going to be able to hold on to him for years to come. And then you have you know, guys like Jonathan Joseph and Kareem Jackson that are aging in the secondary.
Whitney Mercilus would be signing an extension next year. They know all this. They've rolled over a lot of money again under the salary cap like they did this year. And next year, their salary cap money will be spent more on their players because they're going to have a 1 and 2 twos. And they don't need to go out and sign, you know, 10 free agents or whatever they did. So I understand the strategy Brian Gain and Chris Olsen have. And if Clowney, you know, would you give money? Would you give $100 million to a guy that hadn't been on the field because he says his knee's sore?
Yeah, doesn't make a whole lot of sense at this point. And I'm just of the thought that, you know, you can wait on him. And if worse comes to worse, you could franchise tag him. And
right.
And you can, you know, kind of hold off for him on a couple of years. But
$16 million wouldn't be out of line next year under the cap. And Chris Olsen, their senior vice president of administration who does negotiations and is the cap expert, I think he's done a really good job on that because they haven't had cap issues. When they did, it was because they held on to high-priced players for too long, trying for one more grab for glory. But once they got it under control, you know, the contract Watt signed was great cap-wise. They hadn't hamstrung them at all. So I have confidence that Olsen, in conjunction with Brian Gaines, they're not going to have cap issues.
Besides Deshaun Watson's health, what factors could play into a sophomore slump for him? Are there any adjustments maybe the defense would make that he hasn't seen yet?
I did a story on with Bill O'Brien that went on our Texas Sports Nation website and will run Sunday's Chronicle about them constantly trying to look for ways to attack a defense because they know that defenses have watched tape and they're going to have a good idea of what Watson did well last year, and they want to have new things for him. And I asked Mike Vrabel at the NFL owners' meetings in March if his familiarity with Watson from last season would help him, and he started laughing. He said so many things that he did were instinctive and not things that you coach. And you can't prepare for an instinctive player. You can't anticipate what he's going to do instinctively. So there's only so much you can do. One of the things I liked when Watson was in, they were third in the league in rushing, 138 yards a game. Had they continued that, they would have finished second in the NFL in rushing. And the reason is when Watson's in, even though he didn't run a lot, it was great for him to do that because they spread the defense worried about him, and that created more lanes for Lamar Miller and Deontay Foreman. And so with Watson back, I expect them to be a really good running team again, especially with an offensive line that should be improved because it certainly can't be any worse.
I'm going to get back to Deontay Foreman a little bit later. In a second, I want to get your thoughts on Brian Gain, but first just want to remind our listeners real quick, if you're enjoying Locked On Texans, tell your friends, let them know they can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, most anywhere you can find your favorite podcast. If you'd like to check out more podcasts from our national Locked On Network, go to LockedOnSports.com, our new Locked On Network website. We have podcasts for nearly every NFL and NBA team. We've got the Locked On NFL Draft Show and Locked On NFL shows as well. It's all on LockedOnSports.com. That's LockedOnSports.com. Well, John, Brian Gain versus Rick Smith, besides their relationship with Bill O'Brien, do you have any feel so far how the team will construct things differently under Brian Gain as far as how they can construct the Texans?
They tried to get Nate Solder left tackle, and they bid $16 million a year for him, and he took $17 million a year from the Giants. And so they decided instead of throwing all that money into one or two players, they would sign a bunch to try to fill holes that they had. That's why they ended up signing three free agent offensive linemen, all of whom will start, barring injuries. They have the same philosophy. I know, you know, Brian, I have a story that's going to be on Texas Sports Nation, I think, Saturday, about 5.5 months after Brian Gain was hired, and he and O'Brien were best friends during the four drafts and free agent periods he had been here under Rick Smith, about how is their relationship now after they've gotten to see each other. It's like you dated for 4 or 3 years, and then you got married, and what's the relationship? And the key is both said is communication. They communicate daily. Rick and Bill didn't, as time went on, didn't communicate that much. And Bill has final say over who plays. The GM has final say over who comes. If a GM took a player that O'Brien didn't want, he'd have to play him. Just like if the GM gave O'Brien a player that the GM didn't want, O'Brien might play him come hell or high water just to show he can play. Now, Bill says he would never do that. He wants the best players out there, and I believe him. But he and Gain, because of the communication, only time's going to tell if that works better. I know this, Robert. He is a one happy dude. As people say, he's so happy over there, he just floats. And one reason is a relationship with Gain. He got a four-year extension and a raise, and he's got Watson at quarterback. And Watson will be, let's see, his fifth opening day starter in 5 years and six for the Texans going back to Matt Schaub's last year. So they have stability at the most important position. It's not just stability. Everybody thinks that Watson, what we saw last year was not a flash in the pan, but an example of how great he can be if he stays healthy.
Do you think a lot of the change that we've seen in O'Brien over the years, and I'm sure you've seen it as well, it seems like just over the last few years, he's mellowed a little bit as a coach. You think it's partly just him getting to realize that, you know, first of all, that, you know, there's not the adversarial thing of the Northeast media a little bit. That's part of it. But also part of it is that, you know, as he's gone along, a lot of the things that he's wanted to do and the guys that he's wanted to bring in, they're here. And now he can kind of relax a little bit.
He had a lot of mentors. He didn't just know the Bill Belichick way that Matt Patricia does. Even though he implemented some of those things that Belichick does, and based on the way the experience he had with the media in his 2 years at Penn State, where everybody, sports media, non-sports media, websites, TV, radio, newspapers, were all trying to get every morsel of information, I thought he did one of the all-time coaching jobs. I mean, if he made Christian Hackenberg look good, that was one of the all-time great coaching jobs. So when he came here, he had his guard up about the media. And I'll tell you a story. The first training camp, or maybe it was the first training camp, we had to all stay down in the end as you go in the entrance. And you can't see squat from down there. And a lot, that's where they put the VIP. So you couldn't watch practice, people asking you questions. And so I think it was in the summer of his second year, they went to Denver to have joint practices. And so it was after that I asked Bill, what kind of coach would you be if you only coached from the end zone and not in the stands or ground level? He said, well, I wouldn't be a good one. Why? I said, well, why would you expect us to do our jobs down there? He said, what do you mean? I said, that's where you put us. I said, we can't see squat. You guys want us to not make mistakes, and yet we're put in a position to make mistakes. He said, well, where do you want to be? I said, well, I'd like to be where it was when you got here, that first OTAs. We could stand on the sideline. We could be in the end zone. He said, well, I don't want you guys on the sideline because a couple of people overheard players talking and wrote it. And so I said, well, what about like it was in Denver where they let the media go in any corner they want to go to? And he said, okay. So that's the way it's been ever since. And one of the reasons I like training camp is because they have stands. And I can go like Mark Berman and I every morning go get in the stands about three-fourths of the way up. And we have our binoculars and our notepads. And we can see every bit of practice. And we can take notes because you're there the whole time like the fans are. And so Bill has accepted it. He still doesn't reveal things about injuries, but he gives us just enough to pacify us where that first year he was here asking him about injured players, like testing his manhood. So he and I talked about this recently about when he used to come in from practice to do his news conference, you could tell exactly what kind of day he had. And one time I brought up something, he said, are you saying I'm moody? And I said, only in days that end in Y. And now, the last couple of years, sometimes you can tell, but not all the time. And I like dealing with him. I have people go, oh, my God, how can you stand dealing with Bill O'Brien? I think he's a good quote, and I think he's emotional. and that's good. And his record for post-game podium was the first game he coached at Arizona in a preseason game in which they got shut out. And Ryan Fitzpatrick's rating was like 0.2. And Bill came out. You'd have thought they'd been eliminated from the playoffs. He was so mad. He answered like two questions and stalked off. And he's come a long way from that first one.
Yeah, he's changed a lot, I think, too, over the years. I mean, you can definitely tell. Let me ask you about the rookies. We haven't seen a ton of them, obviously. It's just mini camp OTAs, rookie camp. Is it possible, though, that Justin Reed, Kiki QT, and maybe even Jordan Akins could be starters week one?
I think that Justin Reed will definitely be a starter. They stole that guy in the third round, and he and Tyrann Mathieu are going to make a really good pair. The key is, of course, keeping Mathieu healthy. I'm just amazed at how small he is to be so physical. But he played more plays than any player in the NFL last year, and they're playing him more at safety, keeping him away from the line of scrimmage. I think they'll use him as a blitzer sometimes, and they'll have him covering. But Reed, he's a rookie. They need him to learn like Zach Cunningham, just keep getting better in coverage as the season goes, because having him and Cunningham to cover tight ends and running backs is really good. And I'm not sure about Jordan Akins. He's a really good receiver. He's 26. He's a little bigger than I thought. I think he's 6'4", 255, and he's got to learn to be a blocker. They said he shows personality-wise what you want, and once they put on pads and get to camp, that he's willing to get in there and stick his head in there and block. He just didn't have to do it in college, and he's got really good hands, and he's fast, and he runs routes. And Martinez Rankin, who hurt his foot in the rookie minicamp, had surgery. They're hoping he'll be back for the start of regular season. They need more tackles. That's why they claim Roderick Johnson on waivers from Cleveland. They need some bodies. And Kiki QT, they don't want to go overboard on a rookie. But I can tell you this, Robert, and your listeners, they are pumped about him. They have been since Wes Welker worked him out, sent him tape, and started pumping him up to him. The way he comes off the line of scrimmage, the way he makes really fast, quick, crisp cuts, the way he cuts up the field, and when he gets the ball, he's gone. And he runs in the 4.4s, which is good. And I'm not saying he's going to beat out Bruce Ellington for the slot receiver, because Ellington made some big plays, but Ellington's been hurt every year he's in the league. Every receiver missed multiple games except Hopkins, so we're going to see Kiki QT. And two things O'Brien has not had since he's been here that he wants is a really dynamic slot receiver who can affect game plans the way Wes Welker did, and Julian Edelman. And the other one is he hadn't had a tight end to have a lot of catches. You know, if Ryan Griffin stays healthy, he's going to be the starter. Because Ryan's 6'6", 255, he can run, he can catch, but he gets hurt a lot, like last year. I'll bet you between Griffin and Akins, they also like Jordan Thomas, the sixth-round pick, especially as he played wide receiver out of necessity.
But with Akins, though, you talk about his blocking, but you're not getting any blocking from Ryan Griffin either.
Well, he's better. He makes an effort, just like Akins does. And Jordan Thomas is the one that they want to be an online blocker, so they don't have to use linemen. But if Griffin's healthy, he's going to be the starter. And trying to think any of those other rookies that they got, but Reed is the main one, and QT, those are the two I think we'll see the most results from early in the season, and Akins right behind him.
Want to get your thoughts on the offensive line, and boy, is that ever a puzzle. But first, I just want to remind our listeners, if you haven't already, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, email us at LockedOnTexans@mail.com. If you forget any of that, just go to the show description of each podcast. It's all right there. We want your voice to be a part of the conversation. LockedOnTexans@mail.com. That's LockedOnTexans@mail.com. John, can you put this offensive line puzzle together for us? When the season starts, and this is what I've got, Davenport at left tackle, Henderson at right tackle, Zach Fulton at left guard, Nick Martin at center, maybe Kelemete at right guard. Is that the way you see it? If not, give me your best guess as to who the offensive line's going to be.
I'm not going to guess. I'm going to tell you it's going to be those five unless somebody gets hurt or unless somebody plays really well and earns the job over one of the starters. They've got depth inside with Greg Mance. Kyle, they like Kyle Fuller.
Did Raken have a shot at guard or tackle before the injury?
No. No, I don't think Jeff Allen will be on the team. He's on PUP. And Quisenberry and Slade. So they got four inside guys who can play multiple positions. And their backup tackles are Kendall Lamb, who was terrible when he played last year, and then Roderick Johnson, who's terrible, a draft choice last year, cut by the Browns. So if they don't think, if time goes and they don't think Raken will be able to develop into the swing tackle, it'd be hard considering all the time he's missed. And I think somebody gets cut, I think there will be more tackles coming in here. Now, based on what they did in the offseason, Mike Devlin's really fired up about Shontrell Henderson, who's on a one-year contract, who started one game the last 2 years at Buffalo, 25 the first 2 years before he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease and had two operations to reattach intestine and then got suspended twice for smoking pot for the pain. And Davenport, Mike Devlin said, played really well at the end of last season. I tell people, if you had a chance during this draft to get a 6'7", 320-pound offensive tackle with the widest wingspan, 87.5 inches in the draft, who was a former basketball player, nimble on his feet, and really intelligent, wouldn't you want a guy like that? Well, sure you would. That's why they drafted him. Problem was, he played at Bucknell, and it wasn't until the end of last season that it looked like he belonged in the NFL. And so they can't wait to see him in practice when they go to camp and put on pads to when he's going full speed against Watt, Merciless, Clowney, good pass rushers. I love watching those one-on-one drills when they're down in a corner and watching the linemen try to keep up with the pass rushers. And it's kind of, you feel, it's kind of like the Christians and the Lions. But it still helps them get better. And so something to remember about the offensive line. Last year, as bad as it was, worst in the NFL, we weren't saying that when Watson was playing. They were third in rushing, and they were giving up 2.4 sacks a game. And that stat, Watson was sacked five times in Seattle, and three of those were his fault. So we're not thinking the offensive line's terrible. And then when he went out, the offensive line was terrible. So him being back will cover up problems. So I'm guessing if he stays healthy, they'll rank high in rushing, low in sacks, and we're going to go, wow, man, those changes worked out great for the offensive line, when in fact it might mostly be Watson.
You just heard the first of a two-part conversation with Chronicle Texans beat writer John McClain. He referenced a couple of things he was writing for the Chronicle, and by now you should be able to read more about it in the paper and on cron.com. Tomorrow I ask him about J.J. Watt and if this is going to be his last year, maybe in Houston. I ask him if Deontay Foreman will be ready for week one, if the Texans are serious about sticking with Brandon Whedon, and what Robert Brazil's reaction was when John told him he had made the NFL Hall of Fame. Time to wrap things up. Don't forget, Brian's got everything in Houston sports covered on House of Houston, a fanside affiliate. Go check out his and his staff's stories on houseofhouston.com, a Houston sports talk podcast. Easy to find on iTunes and most anywhere you listen to your podcast. When you're done listening to today's Locked On Texans, rate us on iTunes or whatever format you're using. Let us know what you think, what you might suggest, and we'll definitely take it to heart. That's all we got for this one, though. As always, thanks for making us a part of your week.
You are Locked On Texans, your daily Houston Texans podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.